I'm here with Ed Timberlake to discuss our briefing, which introduces our new book entitled Rebuilding Military Power in the Pacific, Crafting a 21st Century Strategy, which we did with Richard Weiss of the Hudson Institute. First slide focuses on the approach that we built, and the approach basically is building from the realities of the capabilities we currently have towards the capabilities that we're going to need, but also but based really on real world operations. And what we've tried to understand is by talking to people who are doing this, how the future is being created. Second slide. A key aspect of change, which is different from the last 30 or 40 years, is the U.S. has invested heavily in new technologies and driven its concept of operations in terms of nationally acquired technologies. What's happening now is that the role of our allies is growing in importance, both in investments and in terms of capabilities. In fact, earlier in this conference, Gordon Chang had made the point in talking about the People's Republic of China that they will face financial pressures, and therefore some of the capabilities they want to own, they won't own. The U.S. has the advantage of working with allies who have money to invest and a more confluence of joint interests. The next slide is basically highlighting some of the themes that we've also drawn upon in shaping this approach. We have looked at the last decade and looked at some of those innovations that should be taken forward. We're also trying to understand the impact of new technologies, notably the F-35 fleet, on this decade. Our proposition is a simple one, that there's going to be a lot of innovation in this decade in the Pacific, and that innovation will shape the next decade. We also believe that there is an importance of having a military strategy to deal with the People's Republic of China. And we think that's a problem because if you don't have a military strategy, you really can't claim to have a grand strategy. The book looks at a broader view of 21st century strategy than do most analysts. We're looking at some of the military dynamics, such as the coming of the second nuclear age that Paul Bracken talked about, which is associated with nuclear powers like North Korea, which are not deterred in the classic nuclear deterrence formula, so it requires change and innovation. We're also obviously looking at China in both senses of them being reaching out and being troublesome, or themselves having deep economic problems. We also look at the expansion of the geography of the Pacific, which is already huge, with the Arctic opening, and we look particularly at the maritime security aspects of managing this giant sea space. The next slide actually highlights a key point of the first chapter in the book, which is we look at the geography of the Pacific. And in that strategic geography, we highlight a couple of realities from the operator's point of view, which is for the U.S. leadership, which is really based in Honolulu, whether they be AFPAC or MARFORPAC, the Marine Corps or the Navy leadership or the Air Force leadership, they're looking at force generation from Guam to Japan. And the operational venue is in the quadrangle from Australia to Singapore, north to South Korea and Japan. It's this quadrangle that is the basis of innovation this next decade. Interestingly, after we given this proposition, the PRC had declared an air defense identification zone. We then took our map and looked at, well, where is this zone on the map? And we discovered that the Chinese are asserting their right to essentially impede any reinforcement of Taiwan by air. That's essentially what this map shows us. It also hides the fact that PRC has a very unusual air identification zone in the sense that they're insisting that anything that passes through it gives them flight plans, not things that are actually coming into their territory. The third part of the book follows the first and the second. The second looks very much at the U.S.-Japanese relationship and the Japanese evolution of defense policy. And then the third part looks at the shaping of a 21st century force. And the proposition here is very simple. We're shifting the focus from a 20th century focus, which was linear in pushing power out, that is power projection understood as moving from X to Y, to a distributed approach, one which is its forward presence, it's what the allies are prepared to do, and the capabilities they have, and the ability of us to do a much better job of working with allies, for us, in effect, to become a honeycomb force working with the allies. A key aspect of this, next slide, is the F-35 in the Pacific as a fleet. During a recent visit to Italy, I was able to look at Camry, which is a supply facility that will support the entire Mediterranean fleet. And in this case, we'll see this replicated in Japan, but the whole point is that instead of having to bring planes from the United States, the depots and support elements are forward deployed, which is a radically different concept.
In order for military technology to be understood, the cycle of it has to first be understood. And it's a genesis of independent research and development into the R&D world, and a lot of countries come to the fore all trying to figure out exactly what the future holds and will our developing technology give them a competitive edge against a reactive enemy in the future. Oftentimes, individuals jump out 10, 20, 30 years in this thought process. The approach that we've taken is to look basically at the next decade and recognize what is real and what is currently on the close to being real development of military technology. We use the F-35 first and its fusion engine as a perfect example of the technology. It is both developed and has the potential for tremendous independent research and development growth. This slide captures that. In the cockpit for the first time, the fighter pilot will have as much real-time horizontal honeycomb information as perhaps the air battle managers. This is a challenge for training and tactics and CONOPS yet to be developed. It is not our intention to try and predict where that's going to go, but rather to discuss the building blocks that create this tremendous fusion engine in an F-35 and what does it really mean. Of the five different systems, each one has its own R&D vector, and it feeds into the fusion engine, which in a great law of intelligence or information, the rule is intelligence or information goes up and out. So the F-35 fighter pilot, enabling the entire fleet along with his counterparts, everyone's equal in this in a lot of ways, can then be part of the honeycombed air battle. And this technology is here. It's a matter of political will and fielding it. You couple this with the emergence of the USS Ford, the new major supercarrier coming out of Newport News, the America class, the P-8, and the Air Force F-22, and other intelligence flying CONOPS, including unmanned systems, and this honeycomb is coming to fruition. But it is not our approach to dictate where it's going, but rather to tee up where the squadron pilots at the first lieutenant or captain major level, depending on service, or lieutenant commander level in the Navy team, will take this. They're the ones that will embrace this technology. They'll make it work and eventually become the air battle commanders. So this slide tries to capture in a very eloquent way the building block that is coming to the Pacific sooner than later, and it's in the heart and soul of the end of our book. So the key elements for the way ahead on the final series of slides, as I said, is the schoolhouse down at Eglin, where the Army, Navy, Air Force, and foreign and allied pilots come together to learn how to fly the 35, is a real driver of change. The next iteration is that once this cockpit sensing, communications, EW, etc. Development is perfected and studied, it can migrate to perhaps the whiteboard design of the new bomber. But there's a dynamic at work in the military equation, and this is being seen right now in the Pacific, which is S-cubed. It's a term we've coined to mean sensors combined with stealth and speed. Dr. Mark Lewis really gave us the insight that stealth and speed in a lot of ways can be traded off if done appropriately, sensors being critical. The F-35 happens to have all three, which is a real plus. So consequently, these elements of a development path are on the table. It's a matter of political will, again, as I've said, and not necessarily blue sky thinking on this. It's very real. The brilliance of what the American military industrial complex has done is it's given us a template to also address what we are going to call the second nuke age, which is a dynamic change where you had unilateral, bipolar, not really a, the new original nuke age was Cold War derivative. The current nuke age is proliferation and serious challenges, and this type of technology can play into that quite well, if anything can. Finally, our way ahead is the decade of technology. Challenges and development are a matter of budget will as much as a matter of feeling it. And consequently, as I've said earlier, the Ford, the Air Wing after next, the impact of the America, especially with the Navy Marine Gator team, is critical. And the Air Force discussions about their future bomber plays into this quite well. So consequently, all of these elements are coming together in the last part of the book, which makes it not only descriptive of what's happening, capturing the foreign policy elements of it, but it also is prescriptive or future-oriented on what is the art of the possible against a reactive enemy.